105 years ago, almost to this very week, something remarkable happened in a small apartment in London. At the time when the world was still bleeding from the wounds of the First World War, a man called Hazrat Imad Khan lit a candle and held the first universal worship. He created a ceremony where the light of every faith tradition could burn at the same altar, equally respected, where people from all backgrounds could be welcome. What a powerful statement. The world had just tried to destroy itself, and instead of giving in to hopelessness and despair, he could have taken the first boat back to India, but his response was love, harmony, and beauty, and a serious dose of resolve. Today we look around us, and what do we see? Probably very similar headlines, the same ancient hatreds, only wearing new clothes, different flags, different weapons, different reasons, but the same human beings underneath. The world has changed beyond all recognition since Murshid's time. But human beings, not so much. We are a species that can harness the power of the sun and bend it to our will, has sent rockets to Mars, and writes software whose reasoning capabilities greatly extend beyond our own. But we still cannot live in peace with one another. So today I want to ask, in the most literal way possible, so no hidden meanings. In this new age of social media, robotics and AI, what does it still mean to be human? Just want to go back a little bit here. I also don't have my glasses, which I forgot at home, so I need to get back in. So it's also a very human thing, right? Age, in the end, will win. So, and I want to start off with what I believe, and I wanted to put it on the table straight away. And that is that the secular view of life is not wrong. It is simply incomplete. The other half is not faith as consolation, but soul as fact. And the proof is not in the reasoning alone. It is in the capacity for worship, which is uniquely human, and which no machine will ever be able to replicate. And if that did not make too much sense to you right now, we're off to a good start. Because the point of this whole talk is to share with you how I got here. It's a bit like those movies when they resolve the whole plot in the opening scene, and then the rest of the movie is just playing catch-up. So I hope it gives off that same vibe. So speaking about movies, Stanley Kubrick, the creative genius behind 2001 Space Odyssey, said something in a 1968 Playboy magazine interview, and yes, I know, this is probably not appropriate source material for a Sufi talk, but at least in those days, everyone still had their clothes on, so it was fine, it was just a little shoulder. But he said, when asked, why he refuses to fly while making movies about spaceflight, and he said, when it comes to the question of mortality, in each man's chest, a tiny ferret of fear gnaws away at his ego and his sense of purpose. If a man really sat back and thought about his impending termination and his terrifying insignificance and aloneness in the cosmos, he would surely go mad. The most terrifying fact about the universe is not that it is hostile, but that it is indifferent. However vast the darkness, we must supply our own light. From a purely intellectual perspective, Kubrick is not wrong. As I speak, we are sitting on a small rock orbiting a below average sized star, one of 200 billion in our galaxy, which is one of 2 trillion galaxies, in the observable universe. And to most people, the universe has shown no sign of caring whether they exist or not. There is actually real dignity in Kubrick's response to his observation. The willingness to face the void and still choose to love, still choose to create, is magnificent in itself. And this is the very attitude on which our modern self-help industry is built. And I really respect that. But he is making an error. Not an error of logic, but an error of attention. Because consider this. It took the universe 13.8 billion years to produce you, sitting here at this moment. The precise collapse of the right star, the right planet, the right chemistry, an unbroken chain of life for the last, dating back the last 4 billion years, ending up in you today. In my case, Lauren, my wife, wishes the world universe could have done a bit of a better job. But what can you do? You get what you get, right, Lolly? As you sit here, trillions of chemical reactions are happening in your body right now to keep you alive, without you even trying. This does not feel like the work of an indifferent universe to me. Otherwise, why would it even bother? Why waste the energy? Murshid Hazrat Inayat Khan says that the greatest tragedy in life is our ignorance of what a privilege is to be human. However unhappy a person may be, he says, if he were asked, would you prefer to be a rock rather than a human being, he would rather suffer and be human. This shows that when human life is compared with other aspects of life, it proves its greatness and its privilege. But when it is not compared, man is discontented and his eyes are closed to the privilege of being human. The secular view has led us to build some amazing things in this world, discover and explain the most intricate details of the mechanisms behind nature itself. But it is limited. It only looks on one side of the canvas. It is incomplete. So let us now turn over and see what's on the other side, behind door number two. The soul has a journey. The spiritual traditions of the world, and particularly the mystical heart of Sufism, offer a completely different picture of what a human being is. Islamic scholars Dr. Abdullah Rahman and Adrian Coyle put it simply, you are not a body that happens to have a soul. You are a soul that has been given a body. Your life does not start on the day of your birth and will not end with your last breath either. According to the Quranic tradition, every soul arrives in this world with a knowing, a witnessing, that God is the source of all things. This recognition is written into the fabric of your being, from before birth, before language, before personality. The Islamic tradition calls this fitra, the compass built within you. And the whole of life is seen as a journey of finding that compass again and aligning yourself with its course, or spending days wandering about in the wilderness. In the Islamic model of the soul, there are three aspects. There's the ruh, the pure divine spirit breathed into you by God, which cannot be hurt or corrupted, but it can be covered over. Then there's the nafs, or the so-called lower self, or the entire experience of being a separate I in the world. The concept of nafs is often used in the same way as the Western concept of ego, and there is a lot of overlap. But it is actually a much more broader, because it also compasses not just the mind, but also the body, which is seen as a denser form of the nafs, and in the whole sense of individuation as well. And lastly, there's the khalb, the heart, our internal battleground. The heart can turn, and that's what khalb means in Arabic, that it can turn. And the heart can turn either towards God, or it can turn to the earth. And this turning, made again and again, in every moment of the day. And that is what life is actually about. Within this framework, there is its own paradox, though, that both the purely secular and also the conventionally religious mind struggle to hold. And that is that you are free, you have free will on one hand, and God is in complete control on the other. And both are true, simultaneously. A secular person would say that I am the author of my own life, so I push on my own. A conventional religious person would say, everything is God's will, I surrender. The Sufi says yes and yes. You are the co-creator in a story that God is already writing. The art of being human is aligning your will with God's will, showing up entirely and giving everything and receiving whatever outcome is a gift. Murshid says, the heart is the throne of God in a human being. When the heart is open, God is present. Though, he is never absent, even when the heart is closed. The Sufi sees God in all, and his love for every being is his love for God. Someone told me the other day, and I really can't remember who it was, that your life is like a train journey. You can hop on and off at any station you like, but the train is going in the direction in which it is going, despite what you do. And the way you live this paradox in practice, according to the Sufi tradition, is through worship. But first, the elephant. If we are sincere in looking for the truth, we have to ask the hard question. And that is this whole spirit and soul story not just another way for us to create meaning? In order to deal with the fact that we're all going to die. The short answer is yes and no. Yes, we are all tell ourselves stories to give us meaning and protect us from hurt. I love him, it was not me. Oh, that's a favorite one. You deserve this, life is not fair. These are all stories we create and characters we play as we go about our lives. This is a whole new topic, though, which I don't have the time to spend on, unfortunately. But so, because we've got a lot to get through, but I will still give some advice I want to offer briefly here, and that is to choose the stories that make your rather choose stories that make your life better than worse. And I can hear you say, duh, because my kids do the head slap, right? Duh. This is obvious. But it really is much harder in practice because, A, we are not even aware of the stories we tell ourselves, actually, in most cases. And B, we are not the only ones doing the programming. Society loves to do it for you. So choose wisely what you tell yourself. Because even though there are stories, they do feel real, and they do shape your life. As for the no, and this is really the crux of everything I'm saying today, the secular position says only what can be measured is real. And that what has been discovered to date to be real, according to science, does not care a damn about you. Luckily for us, our own best secular science points directly beyond this materialist view, if you follow it to its conclusion. Science tells us the universe emerged out of nothing, has been expanding into nothing ever since the Big Bang. It's also, despite the unfathomable size of all the planets and all the stars, comprised still mostly out of nothing. And it's mostly empty. And I'm not making this up, by the way. That's what modern physics tells us. I'm putting it in simple terms, of course. But this is the story of our universe. It's mathematically proven, I'm told. Also, that one day the whole universe will return to nothing again when it finally goes poof. So here's now the big punchline. Is everyone awake? I need to check now. And you need to focus and follow this argument. If the physical universe emerged from nothing and returned to nothing, that we know, it's fair to postulate, I always wanted to use that word, it's fair to postulate that matter is therefore just a different phase of nothing that we cannot physically detect. So it's sort of like the difference between steam and ice, right? Both are water, but they're just in a different phase. They appear different on the surface, but in substance, it is the same. Which means that nothing we can see in the universe is actually made up of anything other than the original nothing it came from. Which means that these two things, the observable nothing and the non-observable nothing, can never be separated and is indeed both sides of the same coin. I don't want to be funny, but this story sounds very familiar to me. I wonder where I heard that. I cannot guarantee that Sufism or the Islamic tradition or any other religion for that matter has got it exactly right. But what I do know is that it's probably much closer to the actual truth of how things work than the idea that the material universe is all there is to it. And to my logic, this simply just cannot be. I cannot accept intellectually what the secular view infer, which is basically that before telescopes were invented, there were no black holes. And that before we discovered the Earth was round, it was indeed flat. That all truth is contained in what we currently know is, quite frankly, unscientific. Consciousness is not an accident sitting on top of matter. Not some tricks of our complex biology. It is the real you. The one who know that you know. It is what evolution has always been moving toward. The universe becoming aware of itself. Which is the answer to the question we were looking for. The concept of soul is not a religious invention to make us feel better. It is an existential fact. It is the logical conclusion to all the evidence about reality humanity has gathered up to this point, and is in fact the truth. So I acknowledge that was a little bit intense. So I will sum up this whole section as plainly as I can. Because ultimately it comes down to this. The materialist sees the universal nothingness as something cold, lifeless, and empty. The mystic sees this great nothingness as intelligent, alive, and the source of all things. What should you believe? Take your pick. But choose consciously. Follow the evidence and all of it. Not just the heart that fits into a laboratory. So now we're back at the first scene, back at the beginning, where during this very week, 105 years ago, Hazrat Inayat Khan established the universal worship. Not as one more religion, but as a practice. A way of giving shape to the most beautiful impulse in the human being. The impulse to worship. Real worship is not about God needing your praise. God is not sitting in the heavens hoping you will finally say something nice. Worship is what happens to you when you open yourself to something greater than yourself. It is the expansion of the heart. It is the moment when the drop becomes aware of the ocean. Murshid says, the universal worship was the hope of all prophets, the prayer and the desire of all great souls, that the light given in all different forms, the Buddha's scriptures, the Quran, the Bible, the teachings of Krishna or Zarathustra should be known by everyone. It is a work to unite, it is our work to unite the followers of the different religions and faiths in wisdom, so that without giving up their own religion, they may strengthen their own faith and focus the true light upon it. The purpose of life is for you to become fully human. Not superhuman, not uploaded onto a server. Blossoming, it's just you, blossoming into your full potential. And the way to get there is through love. Murshid says, the Sufi establishes his relationship with God as the relationship between him and the beloved. His worship of God is the expansion of the heart. His love for all beings, and for every being is the love of God. He cannot find anyone to love except God, because he sees God in all. If his love is shown in devotion to parents, to wife, to children, if it is shown to neighbors, to a friend, or in tolerating enemies, the Sufi considered this as an action of his towards God. And this is why the question of artificial intelligence now matters so deeply, because many people fear that machines will surpass human intelligence. Perhaps they will. Let them calculate faster. Let them diagnose better. Let them predict more accurately. None of that touches the deepest part of being human. A machine may one day compose a symphony indistinguishable from Mozart, from they already have. But it will never sit beside the bed of a dying mother and pray. A machine may simulate reverence, but it can never really care. A machine cannot be broken open by grief and emerge more capable of love afterwards. It cannot surrender, it cannot worship. Because worship requires something artificial intelligence cannot produce. A soul. And that is your edge. That's the irreducible thing. And that is the privilege of being human. Your very existence is proof that there is much more to exist than what meets the eye. The truth is never going to be found in the laboratory. It can only be found in the moment, like this one, right in this room, inside the only creature in the known universe that can choose to kneel and surrender him or herself to the divine nothingness that contains everything. In closing, I would like to share with you a fun little piece by Jane McCrae, a poetic meditation on what a soul might be told before incarnating on Earth. Instructions before visiting Earth, it's called. In the event that you wake up and find your soul separated from Source and manifested in material form, don't panic. Your condition is only temporary. You have been selected for the opportunity of human incarnation. This 3D simulation is designed to break up the monotony of eternity by giving you a fully immersive experience as a distinct ego identity. Your body will serve as your physical avatar and as you navigate a dense and dramatic reality. There will be many distractions causing you to forget your true nature and origin. You will experience a range of emotions from joy to loneliness to despair. But remember, no matter what trials and traumas you encounter, your soul remains perfectly safe. At times you may feel lost or afraid. This is totally normal. If you ever need guidance, simply slow down your busy mind and bring your awareness to the quiet place inside yourself. On this planet, nothing is permanent. People and things will come and go. You will fall in love and form sentimental attachments, only to lose everything you hold dear. So cling to nothing too tightly, even yourself. And when it's time to let go with grace. For nothing is owned, only borrowed. As you walk among the people of the planet, try to be a good guest. Tread lightly. Remember that you are only visiting. Don't make a mess. Listen more than you speak. Give more than you take. Don't keep your soft heart locked inside a glass cage, protected from wear and tear. You'll never make it out alive, and time passes quickly. So come back with some battle scars and good stories to tell. We stand now at what may be another great turning point in history, and the same question still hangs in the air, exactly as it did 105 years ago. Will humanity finally wake up? You have been given a body and a soul and a heart that can turn towards the light, and a brief window of time to know that you are here and that this all belongs to you. What will you do with it? Amen.